The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, what I wanted to explore today around this receptive awareness practice is the attitude, how we are with experience. I talked about this a little bit in the guided meditation, but it's actually an important part of this practice. If we are simply receiving experience, just settling back and saying, what's coming to me? There may well be kind of things below the level of our conscious awareness that are happening that are kind of influencing how we are paying attention or what's going on in our minds. And so just a simple example, you know, if we're experiencing some kind of unpleasant sensation in our body, likely there's some kind of not liking, a dislike about it. You know, we don't like it, we're averse to it. And so that's an attitude or a relationship to that experience, that object, that sensation. And so sometimes we can be noticing and paying attention to our experience, and kind of in the background we know, yeah, I really don't like that, but we're not really actually, it's not that not liking, that not liking is kind of in the background, and it may be actually kind of driving or informing how we're paying attention to that. It's like we're paying attention to it with a kind of a force or a kind of a constriction because the not liking is there. And so it's really helpful to begin to just check out from time to time, how are we with experience? You know, sometimes when we are paying attention to experience, our habitual kind of patterns of greed, aversion, and delusion can unwittingly be at play. Our habitual ways of paying attention to things, our habitual ways of orienting to pleasant things or wanting to get rid of unpleasant things, those can be just happening for us below the level of our conscious awareness. And so this consciously stepping back and checking, well, how am I with this experience, helps to reveal that. So it's a piece that kind of begins to uncover things that may not be consciously noticed, that or they may be kind of noticed in the background, but we're not consciously bringing them into the mindfulness. When they're in the background and they're not fully brought into the mindfulness, they can be, you know, basically we may be acting on them. We may be paying attention to, I mean, I've done this so many times, you know, paying attention to an unpleasant sensation so that I can, you know, see it go away, or, you know, pay attention to something that I don't like, because I know that when I get really mindful of it, it stops being such a problem. And so even as I'm doing the mindfulness, there's kind of this relationship of I'm paying attention to this unpleasant thing because I'm going to get something out of it. So it's just a habit. It's just kind of a habit of our minds to have these relationships. And when we're not aware of them, they can be, basically we can be cultivating them. We can be unwittingly reinforcing those habits, those patterns of mind. So this brings up the importance of just from time to time checking our relationship to experience. There's different kinds of relationships that can be revealed. There's the simple kind of relationship, like just, you know, an experience of some experience, a sound or a body sensation, and then just a simple relationship to that. You know, it's just like, I like that sound, I don't like that sound. We're looking at something, we're seeing something. It's like, I like that, I don't like that. So there's just a simple relationship to experience. And often it's a very habitual kind of relationship. It's kind of like, you know, like the sound of a jackhammer we may just automatically not like. You know, it's kind of a harsh sound, and it's unpleasant for us, and so we may tend to not like it. Other sounds, there may be conditions in which we like them sometimes and not like them at other times. And so this is an interesting thing to begin to recognize, that our relationship to experience is not necessarily dependent just on the experience. It's got to do with context. So for instance, it may be that you like certain sounds, like maybe the sound of a motorcycle brings up, you know, kind of joy for you if you ride motorcycles, or it's kind of delightful to think about riding on a motorcycle, being, you know, free and having the air flow over you while you're riding the motorcycle. And so maybe sometimes when you hear the sound of a motorcycle, there's a kind of a delight. But here in the meditation hall, when we're sitting and it's quiet and a motorcycle goes by really loudly, maybe there's not liking of that because of the context. We're trying to focus our attention on the breath, for instance, and the sound of the motorcycle feels like a distraction, and so we don't like it. So recognizing that our relationship to experience is not necessarily just about the experience. It's partly about other conditions and how we are in the moment. So that's one kind of relationship that can be revealed, just a simple kind of leaning towards or away from our experience. Another kind of relationship that can be revealed is our relationship to the meditation itself. When we're practicing, you know, there may be certain agendas or beliefs or opinions about things. So, you know, for instance, when we're lying down to go to bed at night and we're sleepy, that's not particularly a problem for us. But when we're meditating, when sleepiness arises, we often have a relationship to that, something along the lines of, I can't meditate while I'm sleepy. And so it becomes a problem. It's not that the sleepiness itself is an issue always, but in this context, again, in the meditation context, we have an idea. I can't meditate while I'm sleepy. And so that becomes a lens or a filter through which we're seeing the experience of sleepiness. So just as that, using that as an example, if we don't notice that belief, you know, so there's sleepiness happening while we're meditating. And often people report, so they're sleepy and they're reporting just how unpleasant it is. They describe just how unpleasant it is to be sleepy when you're trying to meditate. And that unpleasantness basically comes from the agenda or the belief of it's not possible to be mindful while or aware of sleepiness or aware while I'm sleepy. If we let go of a resistance to sleepiness, because that belief creates a resistance to sleepiness. When we believe it's a problem, when we're meditating, we don't like the sleepiness, we want to push it away. And we're not even necessarily even aware that there's this belief so much. It's just kind of like it's assumed to be truth. It's not understood as being a belief. And that belief creates resistance, and that resistance creates the unpleasant experience around the sleepiness. So as an exploration, the next time you are meditating and you feel sleepy, just explore with this, you know, just say, okay, it's okay if I fall asleep. No problem if I fall asleep. What's the actual experience of sleepiness? How does it feel? If we're not resisting the sleepiness, you'll probably discover, if you're not resisting it, but it's just like, okay, it's okay to fall asleep. I'm just going to sit here and just let myself drop. But let yourself feel it. Feel that experience of sleep, the sleepiness descends, the weight, the heaviness of the body, the kind of the slumping and the mind kind of going into this nice little rhythmic wave experience. it's really pleasant. It's actually really pleasant, the experience of sleepiness. The attitude or the belief around sleepiness creates the resistance, creates the unpleasant sensations, and actually gets in the way of our being available and present. We can actually be aware of sleepiness. We can be mindful of the sleepiness. It is hard to be mindful of something else when we're sleepy. So, you know, sleepiness is happening. It's hard to turn the attention to the breath, for instance, because the mind is pretty it's doing its thing. It's sleepy. And so trying to do something extra takes energy. Trying to direct the attention to the breath takes energy. And there's not that energy in the system. But often there is the energy in the system to be able to just know the sleepiness. And without resistance adds struggle to the system. It's extra effort, it's extra energy, making the whole thing harder. And so if you just explore, okay, noticing that attitude of I can't be mindful while sleepy, maybe playing with, well, what does it mean to maybe not have that resistance? What can I learn about sleepiness? What can I feel about sleepiness? And you'll experience a completely different experience. You'll have completely different relationship to that. And so again, the relationship is really a very important piece. So we can have the relationship. So that whole story about the sleepiness was to point to a relationship to something because of the meditation. We often have a relationship to sleepiness thinking it's a problem because of the meditation. And there's many things like that, many relationships to experience that are coming because we have some agenda in meditation. You know, the resistance to the sound of a motorcycle, if we're trying to pay attention to the breath, maybe comes from that agenda to stay with the breath. In a more receptive practice where we're not trying to stay with any particular experience, the sound of the motorcycle doesn't have to have that, we don't have to have that resistance to the sound of the motorcycle. We just notice that the attention has shifted to the sound of the motorcycle. So there's all these different kinds of attitudes that we might see. As we, and I basically want to kind of just frame the kind of basic attitudes that we might notice. There's, we could say, four basic flavors of attitude. There's attitudes that are based on wanting or desire, kind of a leaning towards something. Something's pleasant, we like it, we want more of it, we want to hold on to it. You know, this is kind of a leaning into experience. It's based in desire or greed. Then there's the flavor of not liking something, of wanting to get rid of something. So often when something's unpleasant, we want to push it away, we're leaning away from it. Many flavors of this, you know, aversion, frustration, anger, annoyance, irritation, a whole host of varieties of relationships. Often fear is in this category. That sense of wanting to get out of a situation is a kind of a withdrawal from, often based on unpleasantness. So there's these relationships based on, attitudes based on greed or desire, attitudes based on aversion. And then there are attitudes based on basically delusion, disconnection. I'm going to talk about that in a little more detail in just a minute. There's a lot of delusion going on in our minds that we just do not see. Of course we don't see it. It's delusion. But there are ways that hearing a little bit about different ways delusion happens, we can start to see it and start to be curious about it. So I want to go through a little bit about delusion. So greed, aversion, delusion, the Buddha actually called these the three basic ways that we get caught in suffering. And this is one of the reasons why checking the attitude is powerful, because often we are unwittingly caught by one of these energies. a greed, aversion, or delusion energy, and not aware that it's happening. And when we explore, oh, what's my attitude, it may reveal one of these challenging energies, and then we can just be curious about it. In the guided meditation, I think I said, you know, it's not that we have to particularly do anything with it. It's more that the difficult energy has now been exposed. Before, it was kind of below the surface and not available to be seen. And when it is available to be seen, we can have a different kind of relationship with it. Instead of just kind of operating out of its habitual tendencies, it can be seen. It's like, oh, what's going on right now? Is there that there's that sound, and not liking is happening. That's what's happening in this moment. There's sound and not liking. Or there's sleepiness, and I think it's a problem. That's what's happening right now. When that belief that sleepiness is a problem is exposed, maybe you'll remember this discussion and say, oh, well, let me try just not resisting it and seeing what happens. So as our attitudes that are based in greed, aversion, delusion are exposed, they just become another thing that we can receive. In this receptive style of practice, it's just another thing that we can receive. It's kind of like we might recognize, okay, there's a sound and there's a body sensation and there's a mood, and then there's the recognition of, oh, I don't like that, or I like that sound of the train. It's kind of pleasant, you know. And sometimes when we like something like that, we just kind of drift off into it. It's like, ooh, I like that, and we just kind of go off into the train and lose awareness. So when we can see, oh, there's that attitude, oh, I like that sound, then knowing that liking is happening, we can stay present for it. It's not that we have to stop liking it. It's not that we have to do anything. Like, it's not that we have to say, oh, liking is happening, I'm not supposed to like things. It's like, no, liking is happening. What does it feel like to be liking something? And then maybe there's another body sensation and another sound. So it's just that awareness of that attitude is just, it's like, it's kind of like, I think of it as broadening the container of what we know. And then we're receiving from a broader container because we have revealed, there's something else that's been revealed that wasn't obvious to us before. So now it can be obvious. Oh yeah, there's that not liking again. So greed, aversion, and delusion are three very kind of potent forms of attitude that kind of pull the levers behind the curtains. You know, it's like the Wizard of Oz. You pull back the curtain, you see the guy pulling the levers, and it kind of takes the power away. That's the kind of idea in the checking the attitude and revealing the attitude. And then there's the fourth kind of attitude, which is sometimes it's not as obvious to us because, you know, greed, aversion, and delusion can kind of stand out. The fourth kind of attitude is balance of mind. It is okayness. It is no problem. It's like things are flowing along, and basically there's not greed, there's not aversion, there's not delusion. There's the absence of those. And the mind is happy, contented, interested, curious, connected. So maybe there's a feeling of allowing or interest or calm or peace, those kinds of feelings. Or maybe it's just no problem, okay, things feel okay. It may not even feel as settled as peace or tranquility or calm. It may just be things are okay. So often we miss that okayness because our minds are attuned to good, bad, right, wrong, you know, I like this, I don't like that. But in the middle where things are just okay, we miss that a lot. So it's helpful from time to time to just check in and see, you know, maybe things are okay. And then take in, how is it to be okay with things? What does it mean to not be struggling? non-struggle is kind of a subtle thing. We don't often actually recognize it because our minds are kind of attuned to seeing struggle. So in the guided meditation, I also said, you know, basically we're practicing with receiving and just kind of seeing if we can stabilize the attention with a receiving. So what's happening now? What's happening now? What's happening now? And I said, every now and then you might check your relationship to the experience. There's some particularly good times to check your relationship to the experience. The first good time is if it feels like there's something difficult happening, if you feel like you're struggling in the meditation, if it feels hard to be meditating, check your relationship. And you can do this with a question, just like, how am I with this? And that checking in with the question, so it's really kind of a delicate thing to use these questions, because often when we ask ourselves questions, we want to give ourselves an answer. You know, we want to think about it or try to figure it out. But using the questions here isn't about trying to figure it out. It's more just kind of, the question to me is more like saying, let's open the door. Let's broaden and see what else might be here. So it's like you're ringing the doorbell and seeing what opens the door. So the question, what's the attitude, is like ringing the doorbell. What else might be here? Am I missing something? Is there something else going on? And so that, just ask that question and then kind of wait and see what happens. You may not get an answer. It may come really fast and really clear. Oh, what's going on is I don't like this. Wow, yes. How could I not have noticed that? And other times you may not get any kind of response. It may be like you ring the doorbell and nothing happens. That's okay. Just keep going on with the noticing that you're aware and what you're receiving in this moment. So if there's a struggle, that's a good time to check into the relationship to experience. If when you come back from the mind wandering, you know, when you come back from being lost in thought, that can also be a good time to check in. Is something else going on? What's my relationship to what's happening now? Because when the mind wanders, often it like wanders into some new terrain, and you know, it might be thinking about what happened yesterday and some situation you were in that had some stress to it, and your mind wanders into that situation with that stress, and when you wake up, it's like that stress has been created in your system. And if you are just waking up and thinking, oh, you know, okay, come back, I need to pay attention to something, like I'll pay attention to my breath, or I'll redirect the attention to the present moment. But what's actually happening is that there's stress in the body because the mind has been wandering into a stressful thought. So often when the mind wanders, it creates something. It creates a new landscape. And when we come back from wandering, it's often useful to check in, okay, hey, what's the landscape? What's here now? And sometimes the question of attitude is a good one to ask at that point, because it can reveal, you know, some subtle hidden thing that might have been created when the mind wandered. So checking the attitude if it feels like it's difficult, checking the attitude if when the mind comes back from wandering, that can be useful. Also, we can often see a relationship to the wandering itself. We may notice a judgment. That's a very common attitude for people to notice when they return from wandering. It's like, my mind is always wandering, and when am I going to be, you know, I'm not a good meditator, when is it going to stop wandering? So that kind of judgment about the wandering itself, again, an attitude about the meditation itself. So that's often a relationship to the wandering that's useful to recognize. Another time that it's useful to notice the attitude is if it feels like it is going really well. You know, it feels like the meditation is just like perfect. That's a good time to check the attitude, because sometimes we lean into those. We kind of unwittingly get caught by that, and the attitude may be something like, I figured it out now. I know how to do it now, and I'm never going to not know how to meditate again. I'll always be able to be present. You know, our minds will do things like this. And so, you know, sometimes when it's going really well, our mind can create a leaning into that experience. So, let me see. Before I go into talking about greed, aversion, and delusion a little bit, I just want to stop and see, are there any questions about what I've said so far? Anything that... Okay, I'll continue. So, kind of exploring these four attitudes in a little more detail. Greed and aversion, those attitudes of wanting and not wanting, those are more obvious to us. You know, those are ones that we're more familiar with. There are obvious and subtle forms of each of those. So, you know, there's the obvious wanting, you know, this is what I need to have, this is right, this is good, you know, this is what I want, that kind of obvious leaning into experience. Subtler kinds of attitudes about wanting may be expectation, you know, kind of like, ooh, is something nice going to happen? Or amusement can be a subtle kind of leaning into. Or excitement also can be a little agitated relationship to something that we like. So these are just subtler forms of this attitude of leaning into. And again, I want to restate, because sometimes when I mention things like, you know, amusement or excitement as being forms of greed, you know, that creates do I want to go there? You know, do I want to be noticing excitement as something that's a form of greed? Because I like excitement. What I'm wanting to encourage is mostly curiosity about what's happening in our minds. When you notice excitement in your mind, it's the idea here isn't, or amusement, you know, maybe you notice something going on and it's like, this often happens, and it actually happens with the deepening of the meditation practice, that we begin to be amused about seeing our minds do the stuff they do. It kind of indicates that the mind is not quite so stuck to it anymore. It's not frustrated by what it's doing. It's more like, oh wow, look, it's doing that again. Amazing. And it's kind of amusing. And so in a way, the amusement can represent a letting go of some of the clinging. But it may also still be a little bit of kind of sticking to. So the curiosity is just like, well, okay, so there's amusement arising right now. What's that like? So we're not trying to get rid of anything. We're just trying to be interested in it, to recognize amusement's arising. This is what it's like to be a human being that's feeling amused. The idea about these checking the attitude isn't, oh, you know, greed is arising. How do I get rid of greed? That's aversion applied to greed. So the exploration is, oh, greed is arising. Can I know that? Amusement is arising. Can I know that? Excitement is arising. Can I know that? And what we discover as we kind of get curious about these subtler forms of greed or aversion is that things that we might initially think were, you know, pleasant, or, you know, like excitement can feel pleasant at times. You know, there's a kind of a recognition of this is an experience that is a delightful, perhaps. And then there's a little bit of extra energy around it. And that extra energy, what we can discover maybe with excitement is that extra energy is actually agitating. Excitement has an agitating quality to it. And as we start to see the delight there and the agitation there in the excitement, because it has both delight and agitation, then what might happen is that it's not that the delight might go away, but maybe the agitation part of it would begin to diminish as we are just curious about that state, that experience. Like, oh, excitement includes agitation. And the mind recognizing that part is, it just feels a little off somehow. Feels a little bit, it's suffering, it's struggle. So again, you know, I'm more interested in being curious about what arises, what you're seeing as you expose these attitudes, not to have any agenda or idea or belief that any of them are bad or wrong or a problem. You know, these the balance of mind, Sayadaw Tejaniya sometimes calls right attitude or wise attitude, and when we can come into a balance of mind around experience, it doesn't matter what we're paying attention to. Any experience we can learn from. When the mind is okay and balanced around what's arising, it's just noticing and curious and learning about, wow, this conditions that, and the mind begins to understand how it gets caught by certain things and how it can let things go. So that balance of mind is a place where we can just watch and learn about our minds. And that learning creates the conditions for understanding, wisdom, to help us to let go of these habitual patterns. And when we see what we might call unwise attitude of greed, aversion, or delusion, I would say would only qualify as unwise attitude if it's not seen. And so when it's under the surface, when it's not available to be known, greed for experience, that leaning into, that excitement, that wanting something to continue, that holding on to something, when it's not seen, it's generating more of that. It's generating more wanting. It's generating more greed. But as soon as it's become seen, as soon as we can know, oh, greed is what's happening in the mind, then it's like that attitude, which was formerly like a filter on our experience, it's like a colored glasses. We were looking through the blue lenses at things and liking the blue. And at some point, we begin to recognize, oh, what's happening is there's blue lenses. It's like we've taken those blue lenses off and we're looking at them now instead of looking through them. So it's not influencing the mind in the same way. It's not, we're just able to know, oh, this is what's happening. Greed is what's happening. Aversion is what's happening. And it's no longer functioning as unwise attitude. It's, in a sense, we can have balance of mind, wise attitude around greed and aversion and delusion. That stepping back, kind of like, oh, this is what's happening. So, greed, there's these kind of more obvious and subtle forms of greed. And likewise with aversion, there's the obvious forms of aversion like anger, rage, hatred, dislike, and then maybe subtler forms of of annoyance or irritation or impatience, things like that might be subtler forms of aversion. And then within the meditation itself, it may be, you know, there may be a subtle form of aversion, something like by paying attention to this thing properly, it will go away. If I just do the meditation right, this will go away. This unpleasant thing will go away. So greed and aversion are the more obvious forms of these unwise attitudes that, when revealed, are no longer unwise attitudes, but just experiences. So again, we don't have to get rid of them, but we do need to see them. We do need to watch them, be curious about them. If we can have curiosity about them, they're not kind of digging. Earlier in this week, somebody was talking about, like, when a pattern repeats itself, it's like it digs its groove deeper and deeper and deeper. And when we can recognize a pattern like greed or aversion happening, something about that, mindfulness of it, keeps it from digging the groove deeper. In fact, it can be weakening that groove. I've seen a groove in the mind of anger, which was very powerful force in my mind. It was almost like pretty much any thought could land in anger. You know, there were so many connections to the anger groove that just about anything could get that ball dropping into that groove. And it was a very deep, very profoundly deep groove. It's like the ball dropped into that groove. It was really hard to get out of that groove. And yet, over the course of the years of meditation, it's like, you know, it's not that that anger has gone away, but it's more like the groove has gone like this. It's like, really, it's like the ball rolls in and it just rolls out. It's seen and it just rolls out. So we can change our minds, profoundly change our minds through this process. So then delusion, this one is often more interesting in a way, and harder to recognize. You know, the most obvious forms of the relationship of delusion are kind of like when we're disconnected. When we're not mindful, that's a form of delusion. You know, it's the disconnection. We're not aware. So unawareness, disconnection, being checked out, spaced out, those can be forms of delusion when we're not connected with experience. And that said, it's interesting, you know, so that spaced out, for instance, you know, we think spaced out is, you know, it's like, okay, that's delusion. So if I'm spaced out, it means that I can't be mindful. We might think that. It's possible to have spaced out. I mean, when we are spaced out, we tend to be disconnected and we tend to be not mindful. It's like there's a very strong habit of not being mindful when we're in that space of the mind kind of pulling away from experience. To me, what spacing out is like removing from the physical world and kind of creating a space in the mind in which the mind can rest. Something like that is the experience of spacing out. And I know that because I've been able to watch the mind space out with mindfulness. It removes itself from physical experience and creates a kind of a pleasant, buzzy state that we can be aware of. So it is often a form of delusion when we're spaced out because we are not mindful, but it's not necessarily a form of delusion. So this is, again, you know, it's like we notice, oh, spacing out is happening. Our initial response might be, how do I get rid of the spacing out? Because we think it's a problem, again, an aversion to that state of mind. How do I get rid of the spacing out? Brighten up my mind so that I can connect to the physical experience. This was my first approach to this when I noticed I was spacing out. It's like spacing out. Oh, I notice I'm spacing out. I'm supposed to be connected to my body sensation, so let me come back to my body. And then the mind would space out again. And, okay, come back to the body. And at some point, instead of coming back to the body, I just decided to get interested in that feeling of the spaced out itself and discovered that it is actually possible to know that. It is a disconnection from physical experience, but the mind can know the state itself. So again, the checking into the attitude is like, okay, what's happening right now? Disconnected from experience is what's happening. That doesn't mean, okay, let me connect to experiences. It might mean, oh, I know that I'm disconnected from experience. What is that like? What kind of experience am I disconnected from? I'm aware right now, so I'm connected to some parts of experience, but not others. So what parts am I connected to, and what parts am I not connected to? Just being curious about that state. So delusion has a variety of states like that. You know, sleepiness might be in that camp, and restlessness could be in that camp. These places where the mind just tends to get agitated or dull and disconnect from experience. So that's kind of the most obvious form of delusion, that pulling back from or not being connected with experience. And again, we can be curious about what does it feel like to be disconnected from experience. So that's the most obvious kind of delusion. Subtler kind of delusion is when we are connected to experience, but we have some kind of a view that we're seeing the experience through, but we're not aware of that view. This happens to us a lot. This is a large part of how we live our lives, that we have these views. It's like we're swimming in our own views, our views of who we are, of our that we've learned from our families, we've learned from our school, we've learned from our friends, we've learned from our culture, our views of who we are, what our culture is, and it's like we don't question these, but they're just these views that we are living through. It's kind of like the air we breathe. We just take it for granted and interpret the world through these views without even recognizing that we're using a view to see the world. So, an example we can see when other people apply views to us, like, you know, a friend might, you know, say something like, well, you know, you're just always that way. You know, you're always late. And you might think, well, no, that's not true. I'm not always late. I mean, sometimes I'm late, but no, I'm not always late. So we kind of chafe a little bit when we feel that other people apply views to us or put labels on us. We could kind of look at views as kind of being a label, essentially. But we do this to ourselves. We have certain ideas, beliefs about who we are, what we're capable of, what kind of person we are, and we don't question them. We don't question those views. That some of these views come from our culture. You know, we may have a view, one view that I think comes from American culture is something like, America is the land of opportunity. If you work hard enough, you can achieve your dreams. That's a kind of a cultural myth that we may buy into. And in particular, a certain demographic may buy into it, that perhaps white people with a certain amount of privilege in this world might be more able to have that cultural myth be a reality. And then perhaps apply that to someone who grows up in a very challenging situation, in poverty, in without privilege, and say, well, obviously that person is not trying hard because they're not achieving what they could. Whereas we're not seeing that this, it's this myth that we're seeing through, this kind of cultural view, the view of essentially privilege that we're seeing through. And creating views and beliefs about other people based on that view. So this kind of thing happens to us a lot. So, exploring what's going on, it can be useful in our world, especially if you're finding that there's some kind of conflict, interpersonal conflict, or differences of opinions, differences of perspective. It can be useful to check in. A question to check into is, what am I believing? What am I believing? Is there some belief that's operating in this situation that I am not quite aware of? So what am I believing? What am I believing? I mean, we have so many beliefs, and some of these beliefs are not even verbalized. Like we have, culturally, we have beliefs around how close you stand to somebody that you don't know when you first meet them. Or whether you make physical contact with somebody, or how much eye contact you make with the opposite sex. All kinds of cultural norms that we experience or that we kind of live in, and we don't necessarily notice that we're living in those cultural norms until we meet somebody from another culture. And then we may notice some discomfort, in that interaction. It's like, that person is really looking directly into my eyes. What does that mean? And, does it mean they really like me, or are they trying to figure out what I'm thinking? And it's just, that's their culture. That's the way that they tend to relate. And so we've perhaps created extra meaning on a situation because of a cultural perspective that we carry. So these perspectives that we carry them from our families, from our own conditioning, from our culture. We can carry perspectives based on agendas of things that we are doing, We can see certain things and not see other things because we have an agenda. This actually happens a lot to us too. If we have an agenda to look at something in particular, to solve a particular problem, or to watch something, to notice something in particular, we are not going to see things that are not relevant to that. They just will fade into the background. And so it's not so much a problem. That piece of it isn't so much delusion, because it's a natural function of our mind that when we focus on something, things that are not connected to that focus just fall away. But what is a form of delusion, and what we tend to think, is that we are seeing everything, that we would see things. I was just watching a whole program on this kind of perception and the selective attention that we have. And there was a demonstration of this. It's like people walked up to a counter and they saw somebody. They were signing up for an experiment. And the guy was talking to them. He was saying, "Yep, we can sign you up. Let me just get the paper and the pen." And he kind of ducks down behind the counter to get the piece of paper, and another guy pops up from behind the counter. Completely different person. And I think about 2/3 of the people did not notice that it was a different person, because they were focused on the idea of filling out this form. And, kind of like, what else do I need to... It's like, you do not expect somebody to just completely vanish and reappear. And so the mind doesn't expect that, and it doesn't notice it. So it's not so much, it's part of a function that it's almost a benefit in a way that our minds do that, because it helps us from having to being overwhelmed by experience. But what What is a problem is that when we believe that we are seeing things accurately, like that example to me, is a really good reason why we should not have single eyewitness testimony in murder trials. You know, we just do not really take in people's features or, you know, even what they're wearing. I mean, I noticed when the guy, it's like, wow, how did he change his shirt so fast, you know? But I didn't notice it was a different guy. I just thought, he had on a blue shirt before, didn't he? But I didn't think it was a different person. I just kind of, I kind of almost doubted myself. It's like, huh, what happened there? Something funny happened there. So the idea that we are seeing things accurately, that we're recording things as if we were video cameras, this is a form of delusion. Our perception of the world is largely dependent on our views and our beliefs and our ideas. And what our agendas are and what we're doing, it's stunning how much we do not see and how much we see what we think we want to see. So it's a form of delusion to not take that in or not kind of recognize, yeah, I could have been wrong. I might not have seen that the way I thought I did. So there's more to talk about with delusion, but I'll save it for another time. And I want to talk a little bit about the balance of mind, the absence of greed, aversion, and delusion, because that's another form of this attitude, is that when we recognize that we're not being pulled off balance and we're not confused, there tends to be some kind of, you know, I mentioned just the okayness as a feeling there, but there's other flavors of that. There's actually a lot of different flavors that can be present when we are balanced in our knowing of experience. So it might be the flavor of peace or ease or tranquility. It might feel like curiosity, interest, or it might feel like a kind of a connection, an allowing, a love, a compassion. So many different flavors of really beautiful qualities of mind. Might feel like gratitude. So it's interesting when you notice perhaps it's okay. You know, sometimes you can land in that okay. It's like, what does it feel like to just have things be okay? It may not be, you know, anything that's staring you in the face, but it also might open you, if you just give yourself a chance to land in that okayness, you might begin to feel into the beauty of gratitude and allowing and compassion for your experience. Or the kind of the energy connected with curiosity. It's like, wow, that is so interesting. And these begin to support these flavors of wholesome qualities as we begin to recognize them. Confidence, I've been talking about some of these qualities this week, you know, confidence might be part of it. Wisdom and maybe a sense of connection to experience. We might be able to start to feel that as we touch into this balance of mind. So in this exploration of our receiving experience, beginning to check into how am I? And I hope that, I mean, basically I kind of lay out the groundwork of the different flavors of attitude just to point to such a variety of experience that might be kind of hidden below the surface of our experience. One thing that I feel that we start to do with mindfulness, it's like we lower the horizon of our subconscious. We start to see the undercurrents, the hidden undercurrents that motivate us. And as we see those, they start to stop being these hidden undercurrents, and we get more choice. There's more choice about what we act on, how we respond in the world. So now it's time to stop. So thank you for your attention.